This episode of AI Meets World is brought to you by Microsoft, making artificial intelligence accessible globally. Keep listening to hear how Microsoft is designing trusted AI innovations that extend and empower human capabilities around the world. Hey, Navneet. So I have never worked a corporate 9-to-5 before, so I am not sure what the protocol on this is going to be. If you walked into a business presentation where they were demonstrating a new security robot, which malfunctioned, misidentified your coworker, and then used its built-in weaponry to permanently incapacitate that coworker, is that something that would be an HR issue?
I think at the very least, there would be some forms to fill out.
And of course, I am talking about the first scene from RoboCop from 1987.
Uh-huh.
If you haven't seen it, get on it, because RoboCop still has a lot to say about the limitations of technology in security and law enforcement. And while in a lot of ways we're moving towards an AI security world, luckily, the worst consequences I have faced so far is getting booted out of my account when I'm trying to buy Blue Jays tickets.
So that's not quite as bad as getting shot by a robot.
No, but it means I'm not going to get those hot dogs.
Still frustrating.
Totally.
It reminds me, one of my favorite comedians at the moment is John Mulaney.
Yep.
And he has a bit in his recent comedy special about how strange computer security can be.
Mm.
And he says something like, you spend most of your day telling a robot that you're not actually a robot. And you think about that for 2 minutes, and it kind of makes you want to walk into the ocean, which is sort of true, right?
Oh, yeah. ReCAPTCHAs are the worst. Like the ones that say, select all the images of street signs. And I'm like, what constitutes a street sign? Is it just the part with the words? Is it the pole? I am human. I'm going to need more clarification. It is getting harder and harder to prove you are human these days.
It is. But if logging into things and trying to keep track of passwords is one part of security, the other, arguably much more complicated part, is how the people who keep things safe actually work. This week, we're talking security. All the ways that you can be identified, how your information is kept secure, and why your stuff is in much better hands than, say, a 40-year-old man with a ponytail, a skateboard, and the screen name The Plague.
Oh, nice hacker's reference.
Thank you. I thought you would like that. I'm Navneet Lang.
And I'm Becky Shrimpton.
And this is AI Meets World, a podcast from Microsoft and the Globe Content Studios.
Nav, how good are you at following the recommended security hygiene protocol or best practices? You know, stuff like making sure your password is composed of at least 8 numbers, letters, and special characters, and you have a different one for every website and program and app that requires it.
I am great at that and definitely do those things for every website, and I'm not winking at all as I say that.
Oh, good. I'm actually pretty good at it, and I use mnemonic devices to remember what they are, and I'm not going to say them out loud in this podcast, but you can be assured they are very clever.
Show off.
And I wonder what the stakes really are if someone gets a hold of one of my passwords. I mean, the variety of movies that I have to watch for work have already totally messed up my Netflix recommendation algorithm more than a stranger ever could. Isn't that the worst thing that could happen?
I know you're being facetious, because worse things obviously can happen, but you do bring up a good point, right? Should protecting ourselves be so complicated? So, to get a better idea of what's actually happening in AI and cybersecurity, I wanted to talk to someone on the front lines.
It's the best job in the world. It's like waking up every day and feeling like you're James Bond or something.
That's Alex Simons, and he's the CVP of Program Management for Digital Identities at Microsoft.
Did he say which James Bond? I'll know I'm in better hands security-wise with a Daniel Craig versus a Roger Moore.
Yeah, I'm a Daniel Craig person myself.
Great.
But he didn't get specific on his choice of Bond, but he's really not kidding about the spy level of danger in cybercrime today. Alex broke it down for us.
I think the key thing that people probably just don't understand is the scale of the cybercrime risk, right? Like, there's pretty good projections that in 2020, it'll cost worldwide about $6 trillion to offset all of the malfeasance caused by cyber criminals.
$6 trillion. That's a lot.
Is it weird that I'm hearing him say that in my mind with like a Dr. Evil Lorne Michaels voice? But a Dr. Evil that you're going to have to take seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that he said it holding his little finger up to his mouth. But Alex says it's about more than just the financial stakes.
For us, it's grounded in this idea that privacy is a fundamental human right, and we need to make sure that people can't impersonate you, that people can't misrepresent you, and we need to make sure that all of the data that's yours about you, you have control over and nobody else does.
So the idea of privacy as a human right is sort of fascinating to me. Like, it's true that everyone's nightmare is having your search history revealed, or for me, having your Twitter DMs leaked.
Or your Tinder swipes revealed.
Oh my God, horrifying.
Uh-huh.
But it's also about more than that. Because when you think about what rights we take for granted, say like freedom of speech or freedom of assembly or private property, they're all about letting you live your life as you wish without impinging on other people.
Oh, I hate when people impinge on me.
In the digital era, privacy is about just that. How do you go about doing the normal stuff that you do, but without exposing yourself to risk or having someone else kind of just know what you're up to? But if Alex and his team are doing their jobs, the average user doesn't even have to think about the AI that is keeping their account safe.
The best kind of identity experience where it just knows who you are and you can get in and do the things that you want to get done. You walk up to your PC and you essentially knock. You go, hey, I'd like to get in. And our job is to prove that you're you and that we let you into all of your things. It's super user-friendly and largely invisible.
Right. And that's the ideal scenario. But I like to think that I'm a very calm and laid-back person. Maybe you can tell.
Yep.
But I cannot tell you the number of times that I have wanted to throw a device across the room because I have forgotten a password. It drives me bananas.
Even you just saying that that's something you're capable of just blows my mind because you are the chillest dude I think I have ever met. But I get it. You know, I would be a terrible member of secret society. I would forget the secret code word immediately. I'd forget the handshake and I would forget my cloak at home.
But in those moments of technological frustration, we forget what that system is keeping out.
The important part is to make sure it's you and not a hacker. So over a billion people a day come and knock on our door, and we have to make a determination about are they really the person they say they are or are they somebody else? And of those billion knocks a day, about 400 million of them are a bad guy trying to take over your account. So we have to defend against those 400 million while letting the other 600 million people in so they can have a great experience.
And given the scale involved, no human security team could possibly make those millions and millions of decisions that Alex is talking about. So inevitably, they turn to AI.
What we need is we need artificial intelligence tools that enable our professional defenders to analyze and look at all of those 400 million attempts and figure out that those are the bad ones and look at the other 600 million and determine that those are the good ones. So it's really a partnership between our machine learning and artificial intelligence and a whole bunch of security and data science professionals to make this system work.
And the way that they determine if you are actually you is about way more than just your username and password.
Thank God.
So what our machine learning system does is it looks at 110 different data points every time you try to sign into a service. So it looks at things, for instance, like how do you type? Because humans kind of type unevenly and QWERTY keyboards make it weird and they make mistakes and they press delete and they go backspace and things like that. But hacker tools, man, they type perfectly and fast, right? Or we look at things like how do you move your mouse? You know, people move their mouse with funny little ticks and maneuvers where they don't go straight to things. Whereas hackers, man, mice go straight to where they're supposed to and they click in exactly the right spot every time. So data like that really helps us determine, are you a human or are you a machine? And then we can also look at things like, well, where do you typically log in from? Well, I log in from Seattle and sometimes I log in from New York. And we can see those typical patterns and then note when there are unusual patterns, like I don't ever log in from Atlanta. That would be an anomaly for me. And so the machine learning system helped by humans would be able to catch that anomaly.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
But also at the same time, kind of strange, right? That in order to protect your privacy, there needs to be a record of how you move your mouse or how you type, which is a little bit creepy on its own. But so interesting, right?
Oh, totally. It's like typing styles is the new handwriting.
Yeah.
And Alex and his team are like CSI handwriting analysts. And I mean, we all have different styles. You know, some people type like they're just mashing their fingers into their phone like deranged orangutans. And some people type like they're sassy 50s secretary pool typists. And some people, like myself, are one finger typers. I get it. Now, Alex mentioned that hacker tools are going to type the same way every time. What kind of tools are we talking about here?
Well, this was actually really surprising to me because, like, when you think of a hacker in a movie, you think of, like, a nerd wearing a gray hoodie hunched over a computer.
Yeah, like Alan Cummings in GoldenEye would come to mind.
Alan Cummings was in GoldenEye?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he's the Russian nerd. He's in everything and he's fabulous.
He is, but it turns out that in reality, hacking is like its own industry.
Okay.
Like, it has its own customer support. It's incredible. Here's Alex.
Hackers have completely professional supply chains, right? So hackers have places they can go buy world-class tools. They have machine learning that they can use. They have data sets that they can buy. In fact, a lot of the best hacking tools even come with 24/7 support and training. right? So there's an entire industry out there fueling all of the hackers. And yeah, they turn their machine learning systems on us to try to learn and understand what our machine learning systems are doing. I think of it as the professionalization of hacking. There are no amateurs out there anymore, man. They have an entire industry behind them.
Okay, this is totally like iRobot.
Okay.
We have these rules set out. I mean, Asimov-y kind of rules. And they're all set up for the robots. But suddenly, it looks like one of them isn't obeying the rules, and we don't understand why. And the only person who can save us is Will Smith.
Yeah, like, I think one of the things that really interested me about this is that behind the scenes, what's going on is that you have, like, these two opposing teams. And on each side is an AI algorithm, and they're trying to outsmart each other.
Yeah, black hats, white hats, classic cowboy.
Classic, right?
Yeah.
And to keep up with the hackers' advancements, Alex and his team have to work really fast.
Okay.
The problem we found is that the hackers update their attack patterns very frequently. So you might have the world's best algorithm, but within 8 days or so, it doesn't do anything anymore because the hackers have moved on to new patterns. So today we use a 24-hour training cycle that is human-assisted. So the machine learning system has a set of algorithms and they run all day long. We get scores out of that for every single attempt to log in or access a piece of data. And then the humans go in and sample that data, then look at all of those scores and regrade them to say, okay, how well did the machine learning system do? And then that rescored data gets fed back into our system that basically regenerates the algorithms. Overnight, the algorithms get updated and regenerated. And now the next day, we have a brand new set of algorithms. So that very fast cycle with the human assistant, it is really kind of the state of the art in terms of being able to keep up with the very rapid evolution of techniques that hackers use.
So the humans on Alex's team have to train the AI themselves.
Yeah, it's really one of those cases where humans and AI collaborate.
Okay.
So they let the algorithms run and the humans score it based on the successes and failures.
Okay.
So basically, every day their goal is to shrink yesterday's number of times that you're getting blocked from your own account or someone else is getting it.
So if you think about our billion knocks on the door a day, right, even if your machine learning system is really good and gets 99.9% correct, you're still talking about a million incorrect scores every day. And then what happens is as the human assist happens over the course of a couple of weeks, that brand new algorithm will get better and better and better until the point we're at, you know, maybe 0.01% in terms of our false positives and our false negatives. And then that's a very good score. And now you're talking about maybe 100,000 missed ratings a day. And that's what we're looking for, is that we're in that range.
100,000 misreadings doesn't on its face sound like something to aim for, but out of billions, guess that actually doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, so like this is one of the things that it's taken me a while to kind of wrap my head around, but one of the reasons that we need AI is just the sheer scale of digital, right?
Mm.
It's really hard to kind of conceive of the numbers involved in any practical way.
Yeah.
So you need these incredibly complex systems to respond to the complexity of digital stuff itself.
I'm getting a headache, Nav.
The volume of attacks goes up every single day. The sophistication of the attackers continues to get better. And so I think only by using those kinds of leading edge technologies and having the best people in the world training and helping those systems be effective can we keep up with the escalation. Because it is just a one-way escalation. Every single day, the hackers are better. And so every single day, we have to be better.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Okay. I feel like he needs like a toothpick sticking out of his mouth and like a Clint Eastwood style growl. We have to be lucky all the time. They only have to be lucky once. Do you feel lucky? Do you, punk?
That is an impressive impersonation, I must say.
Thank you. I worked on it.
Well, then you're going to love this.
Okay.
Because Alex also told me that they have something they call the Red Team.
And those are essentially professional hackers who we have hired to come work for Microsoft and do good. And they try to figure out, how can I compromise the systems that Microsoft has? How can I fool the machine learning system? How can I get in? And that's their job. And they have free reign, just spend their whole day hacking away. And then when they find something, they report it to us. And then that way, as the good guys, we have a chance to go in and identify and fix those problems before the hackers out in the real world get them.
Nav, you referenced hackers earlier. I am totally picturing these red teams as like Angelina Jolie and Johnny Lee Miller. They're like rollerblading and everything's blacklight and they all have 90s pixie cuts. Although I'm going to assume that they're not wearing leather pants because that would be really uncomfortable for an 8-hour workday.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So Alex says one of the things that might simplify this a bit is to just get rid of usernames and passwords altogether, which I would love.
Best thing he said all day.
We think that a world with no passwords is a better world. We know that 81% of enterprise breaches last year were because of a compromised username and password. We also know, and obviously you've experienced this, I've experienced this, everybody experienced this, typing in your username and password on a mobile phone, that is a miserable experience. Just horrible. In fact, the only people who love usernames and passwords, it's hackers, right? Like, hackers love usernames and passwords because it's pretty easy to guess most people's passwords. So we're doing a bunch of work across the industry, both with Microsoft Technologies, but a whole bunch of open standards work that we've been doing with a industry board called the FIDO Alliance to develop passwordless strong technologies that will let people prove who they are and has really nice, easy-to-use experiences.
I am on board for any solution in which I do not have to memorize 20 different username and password combinations.
And I am so glad that he brought up the FIDO Alliance, because we're going to talk about that in a moment. But first, a word from Microsoft. We're living in a time of massive change, and the signs are all around us. It's in our businesses making sense of big data, in our hospitals as new technologies help doctors diagnose and prevent illnesses, and even in our homes as devices streamline your day so you can focus on what matters. This is the invisible revolution, and it's powered by innovative technologies. Microsoft is integrating artificial intelligence across all its products and services to extend the capabilities of individuals and organizations. With a powerful, trusted platform of AI services and tools, they're transforming business and enabling innovation. They believe in an AI future that makes things better for your planet, your business, and you. Join the AI revolution with Microsoft and achieve more.
So, Becky.
Yes.
As Alex hinted, people in the security business are calling for an end to usernames and passwords.
I've seen the picket signs, I know.
Yeah, and you have learned about some alternative solutions, have you not?
Oh, have I ever. I talked about biometric security, aka using your body instead of a username and password, with Dr. Stephanie Shuckers.
What a great name.
It's such a great name, and she's such a great lady. She's FIDO Alliance's chair of biometric certification effort. She's also a professor at Clarkson University, where she's the director of the Center for Identification Technology Research. In short, she is the perfect person to talk to about biometrics.
Of course, it's fascinating to watch movies, you know, who thought of things before they actually came into being. And I like the techie part of biometrics. I also like the interface with the human body. I did a lot of work in biomedical engineering, and I think the promise of naturally interacting with your technology is really exciting.
When we talk about biometric security, I immediately think of the film Gattaca. Have you seen this one?
You're going to be shocked, but the answer is no.
Oh, it's so good and so relevant and timely. It's from 1997, and it imagines this like genetically perfect world where you're identified by your DNA as either valid or invalid if you have genetic imperfections. But Ethan Hawke, our invalid protagonist, uses a valid Jude Law's DNA to impersonate him and get out of his menial job and get with Uma Thurman.
I mean, who wouldn't?
Exactly. It's basically a film full of genetic jackpot winners. But we are not quite there yet.
Kind of fortunately.
Yeah.
But when you say biometrics, are we talking about fingerprint scans? What do we mean?
Fingerprints and more. Stephanie defines it broadly as a device taking a measurement from your body and connecting the you in the physical world with the you in the electronic world.
It's amazing to see the transition for the number of people who have used biometrics over the last 5 years or so. Of course, fingerprint is king at the moment, but then face was rolled out as part of the iPhone X, and then another big biometric is iris recognition, the color part of your eye. Each algorithm operates in a different way, but generally, in something like a fingerprint, because it's not getting your full fingerprint, it's using as much information as it can. So it's using the ridges, the valleys, how they curve, how wide they are as part of the measurements. In something like iris, it's not so much looking at the color, but if you look very closely at someone's eye, you can see variations in that texture. Face recognition really has seen a huge impact in terms of the changes in artificial intelligence because it's been robust to some of the challenges like lighting variations, pose variations, and even things like how you might look as the day goes by.
So scanning your face to use your own device seemed really far-fetched just a few years ago, mm-hmm. but now it's becoming more common. As Stephanie said, it's in the iPhone X, and as Alex mentioned before, it's also in Windows Hello.
Yeah, and there are so many different applications. Some ticketing companies have started allowing ticket buyers to pre-register their faces so they can just waltz into a concert. And there are even casinos that use it to exclude gamblers who have put themselves on a list of problem gamblers.
Wow.
Yeah.
And AI like that is spreading to a whole number of other fields. There's big spending in banking, and there's even stuff happening around authenticating voter identities.
Oh, that's so important. And even law enforcement in the U.S. and around the world have started adopting face recognition software to do things like compare mugshots to faces in a crowd. The bad guys aren't going to be able to leave their basements.
But it's also really unnerving as well, right? Because there are already so many biases in law enforcement data that AI could exacerbate if it's not very carefully applied. And facial recognition already has a bad track record when it comes to identifying darker skin tones.
Oh, boy. I think we can say that it's everywhere. And as Stephanie points out, this technology is pretty new, and we don't have a ton of unity amongst companies or even countries in how these systems are working or how the data is being used. And that is where the FIDO Alliance comes in.
So the FIDO Alliance is a group of companies and governments who have gotten together and said, if we want to use cryptography, we need to do it in a way that is an open specification and an agreeable way. Otherwise, you get a very diverse environment with everybody using something different, and then it doesn't work. Right. So you want that interoperability.
OK, so Alex Simons mentioned FIDO Alliance before because Microsoft is part of this initiative, along with companies like Facebook, Amazon, Google and Visa, to solve the world's password problem.
Hopefully, just by getting rid of them altogether.
Right. In a way, it's weird that we rely on this system that, as Alex mentioned, is as insecure and frustrating as passwords. So what do we do? Here is Stephanie.
Anybody who's on the internet on a regular basis using it finds the password problem because each site that you visit, ideally, you're going to want to create a different password. So that brings a hassle. The longer, the more complex those passwords are, the better they are, but that makes it difficult and inconvenient for you. And then there's a second piece of it, which is passwords need to be stored on the server side. It's a shared secret. And so passwords, those servers can be hacked and those passwords stolen. Even if they're encrypted, often they find a way to decrypt that information. So then your password, if you do the thing you're not supposed to do, which is reuse the password for multiple sites, then each of those sites is compromised.
So another problem with the username password system is that it's vulnerable to attacks like phishing.
Phishing with a PH.
Yes. So those are the annoying emails that you get that tell you something has gone wrong with your credit card and you just need to log in to fix it. And of course, those are actually fake. Mum. And that is how they steal your information.
And with FIDO, Stephanie and her colleagues have also created a certificate program to test biometric software and see how resistant it is to attacks.
Oh.
Yeah, it's important to establish credentials here. I mean, you want to make sure that not every Dr. Nick is selling you their biometric technology to secure your data.
Is he still on The Simpsons?
I don't know. Number one is false rejections, which Alex mentioned, and these can happen pretty easily with biometrics.
For example, you've probably been in the kitchen and you have a fingerprint reader and your hands are dirty or maybe slightly wet. When you put that on the reader, it gives you feedback that says, your fingerprint's wet, please dry it. That kind of thing can help you improve the quality so you have a better match.
And so one of the things she mentions is your hands getting wet, which I know interrupts my phone all the time.
Yeah.
But what about false negatives? Say if you get a cut on your finger and you need to get into your phone.
Okay, yeah. And I asked Stephanie about it. Like, what if you use voice recognition, you have a cold?
And what'd she say?
She said that you'd have to have a pretty bad cold for your voice to be unrecognizable, which I take as a personal challenge. And also that most biometrics have a backup you can use, like answering questions about your mother's maiden name or what have you.
Right.
Then the FIDO certificate looks at the possibility of two people matching, which always comes to mind with biometrics.
There have been these like clickbait articles where people will test facial recognition with twins.
Mm-hmm.
But for most security software, it doesn't actually work through similarities. The software is built on these tiny details like the distance between pupils or between the ear and the mouth.
Oh, yeah. And these are all things Stephanie and her colleagues have to address.
The things that are done to protect the devices are to, of course, make the probability two different people match as low as possible. But the other thing you can do is reduce the number of attempts that an attacker gets So say a random person stole your phone. If they have one, two, or three attempts, and then your phone says no more attempts are allowed, that reduces the probability that an attacker can pull a bunch of people together and get a random match.
And the third risk of biometrics, which is what I find most interesting, is how can biometrics protect against hackers trying to trick the system?
Of course, if you're an attacker, you're more likely to try to steal that person's biometric. And so that's a different type of protection. We call that presentation attack detection or spoof detection, where we are putting in systems that recognize if someone's showing simply a photograph or a fake fingerprint and saying that does not look like a real living person. And so we will reject it.
So this reminds me of a Forbes article in which a company called Backface in Birmingham designed a 3D replica of a head to test these facial recognition software. They were able to actually unlock a reasonable number of smartphones.
Oh, wow.
But to do that, they had to get a phone user to agree to be photographed in a 3D studio by 50 cameras. And it took over a week of work and it cost over £300, which is more than $500 Canadian.
I think I would be suspicious if someone brought me into a studio like that. But Stephanie brought up even more challenges that might arise as new technologies emerge in biometrics, one which she called continuous authentication.
So say it was heartbeat. It might be integrated into a smartwatch. You put that smartwatch on, and now the watch is measuring your heartbeat all day long. So you might not need to then put your fingerprint down or do an iris recognition scan throughout that day because the device, through that continuous measurement of you, says, yep, still you, still her, and then makes it even easier for you to authenticate. So heartbeat is one like that, as well as, you know, behavior, how you type or swipe on your device might be another.
Right, so this is behavior again, like how Alex mentioned the way that you might type or operate a mouse. But I guess I never really thought about something like your heartbeat being a unique kind of signature.
Okay, have you ever heard of biopunk?
Like the fiction genre.
That is correct. It's a subset of the cyberpunk genre, which deals with the idea that biology can be manipulated and used against us. And it usually deals with the dangers of bioengineering. But it can also be applied to movies where our biometrics can be used to exploit us. Stuff like Gattaca that I mentioned before. I asked Stephanie how she deals with people's fears when it comes to how biometrics can be exploited. Here's what she said.
The part that, you know, I think make people uncomfortable is when people are using biometric technology without the explicit permission. And so one role is government can play in terms of regulation, and companies themselves are starting to really be aware of those downsides because they want their customers to be pleased with their experience also. But I think we have a long way to go and a lot of kind of social discussion in terms of what is okay and then what is not. There's been a strong push to bring laws into place that talk about privacy when it of all kinds of data, not just biometric data, but also biometric data.
It is so important that we have regulations in place, and biometric data is just going to be more and more commonplace, more institutionalized. This needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, and companies as well are acknowledging the need for regulation. So in December, Microsoft's chief legal officer, Brad Smith, said that the facial recognition genie is just emerging from the bottle.
Okay.
And he actually called for governments, but also tech companies, to start developing a kind of regulation system so that they're not racing towards commercial success, and in the process, developing unethical practices that will be hard to put back in the bottle later.
All of this, of course, is hinging on government regulation and public awareness and consent. There's already a lot of public misinformation on how your data is gathered, and it can even lead to scary theories, like ones brought up by a writer from Wired. Do you remember that 10-year challenge thing that was going around like a couple months ago?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, where you had like a picture of yourself 10 years ago. There was a belief that that was being used to harvest and test facial recognition data and technology.
Right.
Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And we've seen this in a lot of movies where your biometrics are on file. It can be used against you, either to ensure the status quo, like in Gattaca, or to be constantly marketed to, like in 2002's Minority report.
And definitely that last one is much less far-fetched than it used to be, right? Because we're starting to see that on social media all the time.
Exactly. And a lot has to change in terms of how we're educating the public about why and how their information is being gathered.
Yeah, and it's a good point, right? Like, if the governments or companies want to retain their citizens' and customers' trust, they have to be more transparent. And biological data in particular feels very personal.
Yeah.
And it's such an uneasy feeling if you don't know how your body's data is being used or how it's regulated.
I am comforted with the thought that my identity or my credit card may never be stolen again, but if that cost is that I am being marketed to constantly, I don't know if that's an exchange I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, and it seems like we do have to make a lot of those sort of Faustian bargains with technology.
Yeah.
But I will say that I am looking forward to a world in which I can forget all of my obscure, overly complicated, incredibly frustrating multi-character passwords.
Hallelujah! Thank you so much to Alex Simons and Dr. Stephanie Shuckers for sharing their work with us. Special thanks to North Country Public Radio for help recording this episode. You guys are ace.
Thank you for listening to another episode of AI Meets World from Microsoft and the Globe Content Studio. I'm Navneet Alang.
And I'm Becky Shrimpton.
This podcast is produced by Pippa Johnstone, and executive producers are Stephanie Chan and Kieran Rana.
If you'd buy that for a dollar, throw us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends after you confirm they're your friends and not an imposter after your genetics.
An important thing. And don't forget to hit subscribe so you can follow along next week as we have way too much fun talking to chatbots and we tackle AI and communication.